Welcome to Drukhama Radio. For the sake of clarity, the person referred to as Raz in these podcasts is one of the main teachers of Drukhama teachings, referred to more commonly as Daishi, which simply means old teacher. We hope you enjoy this free content and find some of the material useful to enhance your life and the lives of those around you. Blessings.
Welcome back to Drukhama Radio. I'm Adam, pumped again, thrilled to be joined tonight by Raz. Raz, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me as always. I appreciate it and look forward to talking with you.
Yes, it's going to be a good show, brother. We are going to talk about Shiva and Shakti. Huge topic. And we are going to go through the general energetic principles of them tonight. You'll give a little bit of background on Shiva and Shakti and kind of the engaging and opposing duality of them. And then, as I said, if we get enough feedback that people enjoyed it, then next week we'll go into a little bit more of the mystical, almost storytelling side of it. Okay?
Sure. Let's start with the names. Shiva and Shakti are two names of Hindu kinds of deities and also kinds of energy. So in every mystical tradition, there seems to be a cover story, an analogy, a fairy tale kind of stories. You see them in the Bible. You see them in both the Old and New Testament, the Torah and the New Testament. You see them in various other kinds of works in both the Western and the Eastern traditions, where the deeper concepts are hidden around a storyline that's easy to remember. Adam and Eve, for example, the tree, the serpent, and so on. They're easy to remember, they're easy to understand, and we can grasp them well enough to keep them within our conscious minds and pass them on from generation to generation so that they sustain themselves. But underneath the stories are deeper messages about ourselves and the world around us. So in the sense of Shiva and Shakti, we're looking at a story of a husband and wife who also have a son and family, the whole deal. But there is a husband and wife that are sort of the first creators, the perceivers of reality. Shiva is known as the destroyer and the transformer. Shakti, the female part, is about creation and movement. So they have a romance. Obviously, they have a story behind them, running and chasing each other and moving away from each other, repelling each other. And so I see them as like two billiard balls that are always circling and pushing and pulling away from each other magnetically and electrically, kind of forcing and coming apart constantly. And that's sort of how everything moves around us. And they represent two sides of energy that are within the human being. One side being a very still side, a very still, consciously aware side that is a perfect observer, perfect awareness, and then that creates action and gets things moving. And so Shakti represents that action, that creation process. And Shiva would represent the stillness or destructive process that stops everything. Together, these two, functioning within a person, operate in physically parasympathetic and sympathetic channels, spiritually in what's called the solar and lunar energies of the body. And they're responsible for the way that you operate, whether it's inwardly or outwardly, whether it's fiery or watery, et cetera, et cetera. So when you're on the mystical path, one of the first things that someone needs to understand and begin to explore is how this push-pull mechanism is working within. And that push-pull is always represented, at least in the Hindu tradition, as the great Shiva and Shakti.
You talked about the duality of them, so I want to pull them apart, no pun intended, for a second. And I want you to first speak about Shiva, and then we will get into Shakti, which I know listeners are really going to want to hear about. But just the role specifically Shiva plays within us.
Obviously, in the physical way, what you said, we can go into another time. And that would be exciting to talk about the Adi Yogi, the first yogi, the guy who comes on Mount Kailash and is a householder with his Parvati and his two children. And he teaches the seven main yogis that go out and then teach the world about this kind of inner direction of meditation. And that's all a beautiful story. But more pertaining to your question is the inward side. And that's that solar force. Physically, we'll see it as the right nostril across to the left brain, and the right nostril down the right side of the body is that fiery kind of energy that wants to be very left brain in nature. analyzing, pulling apart, wanting to investigate, you know, kind of watching and perceiving, understanding. The left side is the Shiva side, which is the left nostril, right brain, right hemisphere, and down the left side. So the Shiva part is that part in us that wants to be fiery on one side of it, wants to do something that's opposite of its lunar partner, and on the other side is very analytical. It wants to be able to observe and understand and pick apart and analyze and judge and all these kinds of things. So it's a very strange, you know, most practitioners get confused when we talk about that channel, either subtly or physically, because they say, well, it seems like Shiva has within him a lot of Shakti attributes. And that's why we see in the yin and yang symbol, which is very famous, in the black, we see a little bit of the white, a dot, and in the white, we see a little bit of black, a dot, because in truth, these two energies really are from the same source energy. So they come as like two arms off the body. You can say, I have a left hand and a right hand, but really you're just one body. Both hands come from the same source, but they both serve different purposes. So in this case, Shiva is that sun, solar, pranic force part of us.
And that obviously moves us to Shakti, which I know if you do any tertiary research about is discussed heavily, and the idea of energy being released through Shakti. Talk a little bit about Shakti and then maybe delve into a little bit about what actually activating Shakti is.
Sure. If you look at it from the Shakti energy standpoint, we then take the two and put one above the other. We say that Shiva sits in the mind's conscious view and Shakti sits way underneath at the trunk of the body asleep. And that Shakti or Kundalini Shakti, if we're talking about the body, it would be Prana Kundalini or Chit Kundalini, but that's the Shakti energy that lays dormant at the tip of our spine. And the whole purpose of most tantric exercises or most mysticism that involves this kind of way of looking at the channels and the chakras and the two Shiva and Shakti attributes, we would see that at the bottom, this latent energy, the Shakti, is waiting to be resurrected or awakened. And the only thing that she'll move for, in other words, the only way that she'll get active is when Shiva, her cohort, comes awakened within us. And so we have that awakening is when we're fully conscious, we're fully aware, we're settled down away from the mind stream and the grasping and the worldly stuff. We go within, we reach a certain point of awareness, certain point of perceptiveness, and then she wakes up. And when she wakes up because the calling of her husband, that kind of male energy, is so predominant within us, she starts driving, waking up and driving toward to unite with him, to be back with him, right? So the idea in the stories is that he calls out and she starts coming. So the idea is she starts driving up the central column of the body, piercing all of the knots and barriers and going through chakra by chakra, driving all the way through into the top of the head and reuniting with her lost partner. And then together they descend down into the heart where they become united permanently. And this is the idea of awakening, realization, and enlightenment.
You mentioned Kundalini. What, I don't want to ask you what that feels like, but what actually is occurring there? What does a practitioner experience?
Well, we have a lot of practitioners that actually experience that at our retreats. And what happens when that becomes active, it's like turning a dial. I always relate it with a light bulb that's on a dimmer switch. And once you start turning that dial up a little bit, the physical body, the subtle body, the mental body starts becoming filled with, I use the term light, it's just energy. More energy starts to flow through the body. And because of that, in most cases, the physical body is not used to it. The emotional body is not used to it. And the mental body is not used to that kind of ampage, or I guess it's watts or volts. I'm not sure which should be, not an electrician, but that turning up of that energy, that amplifying of that energy creates within somebody kind of automatic movement, automatic speech, automatic emotions, automatic mind. Everything sort of goes into an automatic mode when she's moving until the practitioner gets stabilized with it. So it's like almost like an overdose of energy. And things just start spilling out of the practitioner. They start speaking in tongues. They'll start going into positions in asanas or yogic postures that they could never have known or have never accomplished when they're not in this kind of state. They start to feel blissfulness and exude this kind of happy joy. It's because there's so much blissful ecstasy flowing through the practitioner that they fall away into this beautiful state. And the idea is not to maintain that state. The idea is to settle and get used to it and then build the subsequent or next state. The sequence of events is to continually climb in higher states and adjust in each of those states. And that's really what the march toward the kind of ladder of spirituality really is. It's stepping one step at a time up that ladder of more intense light or awareness, energy, step by step, until the practitioner reaches a state where it's crystallized. There's sort of a new kind of awareness that dawns, a bridge that goes to the higher mind for the practitioner, and that bridge creates a stable point where they're able to now perceive reality in a totally new and exciting and alive way.
Is that transmission that you're speaking of, it's such a polarity from a generic state of being, right? As someone progresses along the path, does the disparity between point A and point B diminish so that it's not so massive, or is it always that electric? Do you know what I mean? When your awareness and your bliss is brought up as you move through this, does reaching that polarity, is it a smaller gap, or is it always that shocking?
It's not always that shocking. The shocking part of it is that you've gone from one low state and you've broken through a sort of veil and you've coursed way up into this extremely high state. And then you have a hangover where you come down, but you don't come down to the same place you were at. You come down just above where you were at, but it feels like there's a huge disparagement between the two states. And what happens the next time is that the distance between the top state and where you stabilize afterwards is closer together. So yes, you have a rush, you have an ecstatic kind of experience, but you settle into a state that's more closely associated with it. And inevitably, you get to a place where that state is adjusted. There's no falling out of it. It just becomes a regular way of perceiving and living. And that's really what the goal is. It's to be in that highly perceptive and highly conscious state so that you kind of live in it. You're kind of in that constantly, and there's really no place else to go except moving on from there. And that's really what happens. But nevertheless, a practitioner will tell you that every time they go into their next state, it's always pretty heavy, pretty exotic, blissful, pretty incredible. So the difference is they just start the drop. The hangover isn't as harsh when they come down because they're actually climbing more and more each time.
This sounds, this Shakti movement sounds dramatic enough that is it something that probably is not, and I guess this is me abstracting a little bit, but not necessarily recommended for people who are just starting out? Because I can't help but wonder, is that intense beautification of bliss something that is almost addictive to where if they're at such a low point in the beginning that that fall back, even if it is one level higher, is still so far down that they can't help but want more, you know, like someone who's fiending for heroin or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. There definitely has to be an initiatory process that one goes through, that they build themselves up and make separations away from the egoic mind and the egoic reactionary system enough so that they prepare themselves and have had glimpses of it a little bit, but they're ready. They prepared themselves for this. And even though we go through a very heavy initiatory process where the practitioner is aware, ready, and understands what's ahead of them, nevertheless, there's still a longing. And the longing that happens afterward is actually a very big positive, because in the same way that heroin works, you used a good analogy, when I take heroin, I have to get more to the extreme that I might rob my neighbor, okay? Shakti and this Kundalini energy does the same thing, but in a very positive way. It makes you want to go deeper into yourself, into the perception of reality. It wants you to drive deeper into the way that your egoic nature is reacting and conducting itself, and your identity and who you are and how you came to be in this identity. All those things get analyzed and looked at with more ferociousness when Kundalini happens. And so, yes, there's an addictiveness to it, but the addictiveness is actually very positive.
I brought that up just because I wondered how often you begin working with people in the very beginning stages of this process that have learned about this, and how often, I guess, it comes up prematurely, as in, is this something that I can try to undertake, and how, you know, if you have to almost talk them down.
It's a great question. You know, I have a lot of practitioners come to my house, so they actually spend time with me here. Is that when they get to a certain point on the path, I more than welcome practitioners to come by and spend time with me. And, you know, the whole summer is filled with that, actually. But somebody here right now went through an early Shakti, an early Kundalini expression. And she happened to come to a retreat I was having, and it was completely random. She was invited by somebody that just suggested that she show up, and she was in the group, but she really wasn't invited necessarily. And she found her way in. Normally, we wouldn't have an initiate at a retreat like this, but you know, all things lead to good. So she ended up showing up and had a tremendous awakening. And from her perspective, it was, you know, beautiful, amazing, and radical. But there were questions like, what happens if this goes off at work? Because she had, you know, probably 4 hours of blissful Kundalini moving in a way that was making her, you know, she was sort of in and out of it in this kind of ecstasy. So as much as, you know, she's here, right? She is, wants to keep going. There's also the fear of, you know, I don't understand it very much. I'm not sure what it, you know, what is it doing to me? What does this mean? And explain the reactions and the experiences. And you really have to take your time with somebody new like that and help them move through all of the wonderfulness of it and the extraordinary rare chance and experience it is to have that and walk them through what happened, what to expect, and how to prepare for it all. Whereas an initiate that's going through the process, you know, in time, putting their foundation together, they can come in, have it done and say, yeah, I know exactly what to do next. I was prepared for this. So there is that disparagement between the two kinds of people, but it always happens because the universe is so clearly super genius. It always happens in the perfect way for everybody. And I've never seen anyone in my entire life that's ever had anything happen to them in a negative way with it, unless they didn't have any help at all, unless they were going through this, God forbid, on their own, and there was no expert teacher or somebody who had been through it to help them and guide them through it. And I've known of a couple people that have come to me after it's happened, and we had to make adjustments and help them out. But that's the only time when I think that it would be sort of overwhelming for someone, you know, nobody to help them, no way to understand it. And that could be scary and overwhelming for sure.
Okay, as we wrap up, just kind of your final thoughts on Shiva and Shakti. And then, as I said, if we get enough responses or enough comments on iTunes, people want to learn more, then we will delve into this a little bit deeper, possibly next week. But give me your final thoughts.
Well, our practice, the Drukhama practice, is a tantric practice. It's probably closer to Kashmir Shaivism, but it's a practice where we are dedicated to the mother, the divine mother, along with the father, the child, the whole trinity is there. But we really start with the mother because she's the one that comes in and provides us the initial awakening. In Christianity, it's called the Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost. They've kind of removed a mom and then put in a spirit there. But it's really the mother that wants to see her child wake up. So when a certain person at a certain time in their lives come to a conscious clarity, a little bit of an analogy I use is a chick and an egg. When they start tapping on that egg, she rushes in like the hen does and starts to provide, with the help of a teacher, a little bit of a kind of new conduit to energy. And so that new conduit to energy infuses within the practitioner a new conscious clarity. And that conscious clarity begins the actual authentic spiritual path. And we've had many, many people in our retreats that come and get these transmissions or empowerments go through this process. So in the school itself, we have many adepts who have already been through this, some of them through it twice, and are very talented and experienced and ready to help anybody that comes along or is interested in this path. But I don't believe that there's a better, more beautiful way to experience the mystical path than to experience it in a way that makes you more alive, makes you more blissful, makes you more happy, makes you exude life than the relationship between the two energies called Shiva and Shakti. And if you're interested in it, I would urge you to go and find a school or a teacher that absolutely understands it and absolutely knows how to walk you through it, because it's something that will change the way you perceive reality. It's beautiful.
Okay. Well, again, check out drukhama.com. Roz, thank you so much for your time as always, brother.
Thank you.
A ton out of this. It's really, it was great to hear all this. I'm excited about moving forward. I'll be interested. I'm assuming we're going to get inundated with emails. So, you know, stay tuned for that. And
absolutely.
Until next week, brother, everybody be well.
If you have enjoyed this podcast and wish to find out more information on these teachings, please come and visit us at our website, drukhama.com. That's drukama.com.